We're taping, right? We're taping, right?
Yeah.
We're taping, right? Well, make sure we got this on tape. Always record. Always record.
It looked like it was on.
Okay, yeah, we can be back if you want to be back. You want to be back? Are we back?
I don't know, you recording?
Sure. Always. Whatever.
Doug, you were saying about everything is a remix?
Yeah, David and I were speaking off the record a little bit.
Oh. Everything's a copy of a copy of a copy. So what are you going to do? Who owns anything if everything's a copy of a copy?
How can you own the land or the sky?
Oh, my God. What did I just walk in on?
Hey, these are real questions.
I don't know enough of the Chief Seattle speech. Even though it's not actually Chief Seattle. It was a screenwriter who wrote that and then attributed it to Chief Seattle, and then Joseph Campbell quoted it and made it, he popularized it. Now everyone thinks that this great little bit of wisdom came from the native. Populations of
damn shame. So, Douglas, boobies.
It's going to be a good show. I'm excited.
Boobies?
I think it
boobies.
It might be more environmental, which is good.
I think the second half of the book is a lot more environmental than the first half is less than the second half.
Yeah. To make a pun in bad taste. The first part is obviously very titillating.
You've been saying that a lot lately.
Titillating.
Next week we're talking. The woman we're
funny.
Talking
like,
to
I was
next
listening
week.
To. I was listening to this thing on Edward Bernays, and mm-hmm. he was talking about smoking and how he got smoking so propagandized and everything. And then he went to a psychiatrist. He paid like a psychiatrist $150 to go to him and say, hey, what do cigarettes mean to women? And he said, they're titillating to the lips. It's like the last thing the doctor said, like as an afterthought.
Uh-huh. I put the erotic and neurotic.
I realize what that word means. What now?
Oh, I was just saying I put the erotic and neurotic. Was that the big documentary on Edward Bernays, like the BBC one? I forget what it's called.
What is it? The Century of Self?
Yeah.
Or something like
that. I tried to get that guy on our show. I didn't get a response.
You tried to get Edward Bernays on the show?
No, not Edward Bernays, but his name is something Simon or – oh, dang it. He's made about three really, really interesting BBC-type –
I know who you're talking about. The guy, the actual voice. But what Edward Bernays was unaware of was that the United States government had actually cloned him. And so it was like it's the exact same voice in every video.
Adam Curtis, excuse me.
Yeah, it's Curtis. And Curtis has got some little foggy history himself. Like,
you know, one of the main characters in Look at All the Happy Creatures is a clone of Edward Bernays.
Oh, yeah?
Seriously.
Here's a question for you, Alan. Serious question. Would you like us to read All the Happy Creatures and have a discussion with you about it on 42
Minutes?
I'm
about halfway through it.
Nah,
I've been reading it real
and we
slow.
Could, I would love to do that. It would make me read it. It's a dark book, and it freaks me out. I mean, I'd rather read
it. It is dark. They cut off
Alan
his hands. It's
fucked
blowjob.
Up. That's the book that I'm
this is like fucking hot pokers up assholes and stuff. It's a dark book.
Maybe we could all read a chapter recording it and then put it together. It's just an idea.
Just throwing that out there.
Just put it out there.
What do you think?
We could have an episode that's just All the Happy Creatures read by the Sync community.
I think that would take a long time.
There's some poetry. There's some poetry in there, though.
It doesn't have to take that long. We just record. I'll do it. I don't mind. I'll do it in sessions with people. We'll just have different people come in on Skype, and we can, Jason Barrera could read a chapter. We could do the.
Have you read it yet, MK?
I haven't. I'd like to. I'd like a copy. Where can I get my copy?
You'll laugh.
I bet.
You'll laugh. It's got like every conspiracy theory in it ever. Like,
if I had a copy, I'd bring you one when I come out to California. I actually don't have a copy.
Well, I want to read.
I'll get you
Suicide
one.
Kings more than anything, and I've read one installment of it. I'm looking forward to reading the rest.
Hey, I got something to run by you, MK. Let's see. The birthday of Mary. Do you know what that is?
Of what? The Virgin Mary in the Bible? Oh, I don't. I don't know about that.
September 8th.
It's
exactly 9 months after December 8th.
Okay, because So what was the thing? So I went on the show, Type 1 Radio, and they were telling me about so 9/11. And I was trying to figure this out because they were saying to – I understood that they were saying to the day. And so I need to figure out because with the months, you know, where you have like 31 days a month, 32 days, is it actually literally 9/11 to December 8th? Because that whole Haunting of Julia thing, full circle.
It says September 8th is exactly 9 months after December 8th.
What's happening here? We got nothing.
Sounds like somebody's dragging a body bag.
Through the woods.
That's me.
Oh, God, American Psycho.
It's not easy making it in Hollywood, man.
Oh, man. Well, you got me on that Haunting of Julia full circle tip, So that's been very because there's this whole thing, and we were kind of pointing at it earlier by saying with Titanic, you're like, you got something that so many people, like energy wise, like how many people went to 2001 on acid, how many people watched something, but then like, you know, there's these films that are really obscure and super hard to find. And, you know, Patrick Sveck, I believe that's how you pronounce his name. I don't know, something along those lines, which I really wish he had Skype because I'd love to talk to him. He's a fucking genius. But, you know, we've been on this whole Sharon Tate tip. And, like, I've tracked down Eye of the Devil and 12 Chairs, or 13 Chairs, 12 plus 1. And then you have, obviously, if you've seen Eye of the Devil, which I really recommend for synchronicity purposes, it focuses on the 12 disciples surrounding the Christ, going back, predating Christianity and being this idea of the 12 surrounding the 13th. And so there's this thing in that movie, Eye of the Devil, and then you have obviously like Ayin, the letter Ayin in Hebrew corresponds to the devil tarot card. And this is all, you know, we could go on for days about this kind of stuff. But the fact that you have 13 chairs, Eye of the Devil, all about the 13, you know, and then you have the 12 constellations, you know, obviously, you know, that surround, you know, in relationship to the sun, and all this business. But, like, those are really obscure movies that are fucking hard to find, and yet they're loaded with sync, like, to the brim, off the charts, like, crazy.
I've been reading the last week, and I'm actually mostly finished with it. I'm on page 450, and what's amazing to me is how often.
What book again? You got cut off when you said it. What's the name? What book are you reading?
Helter Skelter.
Oh, shit!
And it's, you know, my copy looks probably like, you know, if someone found this, it looks like
is it covered in blood?
No, like, you know, like some sort of madman scribbling in the margins.
Okay.
But what I keep, you know, it's like the number 22 is constantly coming up. All these different tarot associations. It's mind-boggling, like how explicit this is. And what I think is really interesting is the word coincidence comes up every like five pages. This is the book is written by the the prosecuting attorney.
Right.
And he's like, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, if it weren't for this weird coincidence, we wouldn't have found out that, oh, and then in this weird coincidence, oh, and in this weird coincidence. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, there's obviously for having a conversation amongst us, that's not so weird, but it's the sort of thing where this is a sort of thing that I've been on lately is it, you know, it's, and this is probably nothing groundbreaking for you guys, but I was talking to Mike Cleland earlier this week, and we were having this conversation about stuff, and I was like, well, you know, you can kind of do this, and then it's like, what is, it becomes a question if you even want to ask this question, is like, what is the stone thrown in the pond, and what is the ripple? Like, how do you know, if we're trying to do things like cause and effect, you're going to kind of get nowhere. Because it's almost impossible to differentiate what is the stone and what is the ripple. But, I mean, down to, like, how explicit details carry over between movie synchronicities, synchronicities in the case, synchronicities of who met who, of how this piece of evidence was found, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just, it's so... so fucking potent is, I guess, all I'm really trying to say. Like, I could drop in some examples, but basically just to say it's so ridiculously potent, and that you're finding these sinks in the movies, it just adds a whole other layer to it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I see, like, intersecting circles.
Mm-hmm.
I see things have to do... like, they have their circumference, and they touch other bubbles, and together they have, like, pulls. This is, the sync web is a good analysis of how it works, because it's like these, it's like the second hand, like, two webs over, one web up type of, like, jumps that you have to have with sync. But it all meshes together. Just it gets into this part where it, like, short circuits your brain, because you can't put it together and have it and look at it and keep it there, because it doesn't make any fucking sense. There's no way sync can be possible unless it's all acted out, unless it's all planned. So the first
No, I got. I want to jump
Jack
in.
Jack is out of the box. No,
go on.
Go ahead, Andres.
No, I've just been thinking about what you're about the whole thing about Titanic. I didn't want to. I couldn't jump in because I was driving and it was loud. But of all these other things you're talking about, Wizard of Oz, Star Wars, the thing about Titanic is that it was a real thing. You know, it's like 9-1-1. It's like this generational defining tragedy that everybody related to.
Mm-hmm.
The movie in itself is sort of, in a weird way, inconsequential, except that it's that the technology existed and Cameron's enough of a master craftsman that he gave people that same feeling that the news stories gave them in the turn of the century, and that the images from 9/11 gave us a couple years after it.
Yeah.
Think about how he almost prepared us for 9/11 on some level, because so for me, I actually did really appreciate
Titanic is related to 9/11 is what you're saying.
Because he presented such a Titanic thing. The boat was
the unsinkable ship.
But like he created such a grand thing that when it disappears at the end of the movie, you can't – I mean at the beginning they even walk through and tell you how it's going to disappear, and then you're like so wrapped up in the goofiness of the story and being on that boat that when it does disappear, I was just mystified. It's like, where did it all go? How did it all disappear? And that was the same way that I felt.
Well, it took like an hour for it to disappear.
Dust and flew away. And like, what?
Yeah. I was talking about Titanic last night with Amy, because she was saying that she was, affected for, like, she was crying for, like, 3 days afterwards. She was 16 years old. She went to go see it in the theater, And when Leonardo DiCaprio died, it, like, devastated her. And I was tripping on that, because I saw it in the theater, and my sister saw that movie 5 times in the theater, and, like, kept on, like, saying the lines over it, like, in the theater, and people would be like, shut the fuck up! She was like... But I was saying that, okay, so, when it came out on cassette, and it was 2 cassettes long, the first thing I decided to do was take the second cassette and play it with the Downward Spiral by Nine Inch Nails. Which was awesome. I wouldn't. and I was thinking about that. It's kind of funny that we'd be talking and focusing on Titanic because we had this conversation. You know?
It's interesting. This is my initial comment on the Titanic, by the way, was on the fact that because it has been impactful for so many different people. There's a shitload of ways that it sinks. There's a shitload of ways. That you
You didn't okay. even mean that at that time, huh? When you said it sinks.
Jack, the boat is sinking!
What's true, though, you said about his name is Jack, he's with Rose, yeah. She's a redhead. It's yeah. obviously like Leo, Beast, Rose, redhead, beauty.
Yep.
And then it's like this, now you, Douglas, made the connection about it having to do with 9/11. So it's Beauty and the Beast, 2 towers.
Yep, it wasn't the airplanes that killed the Beast, it was Beauty.
Right, it was Beauty that killed the Beast.
Yep.
Well, yeah, so, Andras made the point of, like, real life events, which, is definitely the angle that I'm more interested in. And again, it's not to separate them, but, like, you know, some people are more interested in watching movies. Some people are more interested in, like, how the real life things play out. That's definitely my angle and, what speaks more to me. And then there's the overlap. Like, David, you were talking about Sharon Tate's role in this movie, you know, with the 12 and the 1 being the 12 disciples and the Jesus figure. I mean, there's a part in here where Manson heads out with 12 family members, and they're referring, you know, it's like, oh, these are the 12 disciples, and he's Jesus. They're making the point that he's both Jesus and the devil, which we our way to synchronize really went into, the idea of the two sides of the coin, all this sort of... I thought it was really interesting. There was a point where, you know, you guys just had the Joseph Campbell guy on. Let me see if I can... here, oh, just this line. It says... I was surprised the wide variety of people Manson knew. Charlie was a chameleon. Greg said he often professed that, quote, he had 1,000 faces and that he used them all.
No.
He told me that he had a mask for everyone.
Oh, God. He was a hero.
The hero with 1,000 faces. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And I'm like, so there's all this sort of overlap with what, you know, with what we study in a very, you could see how easily someone can take some of what we talk about and take it in a very dangerous method, no pun intended, with the dangerous method movie.
Right,
but, I would much prefer that dangerous method than the Manson method, but, here's something that's interesting.
The guy who directed Eye of the Devil was J. Lee Thompson. And if you click on his name, what comes up is Planet of the Apes.
Interesting.
Whoa, I just had a chain come through with that one. That's rather
David,
complex.
The letter Shin corresponds to the Wheel of Fortune, right?
No, the letter Shin corresponds to Judgment or the Eon in Crowley's.
Okay.
Is that even better?
Well, no, I knew it was Judgment. But I knew it was
I don't care. If this is like, nobody knows what the Eye of the Devil 1966 is. Okay, I don't care.
The lawyer?
It's got fucking Sharon Tate in it. That is fucking bananas.
Yeah.
The lawyer for Charles Manson, who ends up switching over to being the lawyer for Sexy Sadie, his name is Shin. The lawyer's name is Shin.
What? I didn't know that was a name.
It's his last name.
Oh, it's his last? Well, huh.
S-H-I-N-N.
Huh. Interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
Shawin. Yeah, you know, Donald Pleasance was, like, I think he's, like, the leader of the cult in that movie, Eye of the Devil, and he's in the Sgt. Pepper movie.
No, he's the guy from Halloween. And yes. Prince of Darkness. Have you seen Prince of Darkness?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, my good God. Oh, great googly moogly, dude. You need to watch, because you know how, like, fucking Carpenter uses the same actors over and over?
Yeah. Yeah, Jamie Lee. Yeah.
So, that guy, the guy you're talking about, Donald Pleasance, is the guy who is in, like, Escape from New York.
Dude, he's a sink goldmine. You can go on with him for days. THX 1138, oh God, fucking, yeah.
He's the detective in Halloween, and he's...
Like, Roman Polanski's cul-de-sac?
Yeah. Oh.
He's in...
What?
Oh, right. Okay, So he is in, this is pointed out by Patrick Svek, that I apologize, Patrick, if I'm pronouncing your last name wrong, but that he's in the collage on the Meet the Beatles, the album Meet the Beatles. He's in the corner, and it looks like it's a fucking shot from Eye of the Devil. I don't know. it's pretty weird. Okay, I can't remember.
That's fucking weird, because Carpenter's got so much to him.
Yeah, I know, Walrus and the Carpenter, that's what, it's a thing. And so they dedicated the last Halloween, or they dedicated one of the Halloweens to him right after he died, because I think he may have died during the making of it or something, and they're like dedicated to Donald Pleasance, but yeah, interesting, yeah.
Bananas.
Mr. Pleasance.
So,
how is Mrs. Pleasance?
There's a thing that happens in Full Circle when they're talking about the seance circle, and she goes, seven's a good number, seven's not a bad number, talking about the number of people in the circle, and Mia Farrow exits the circle, and it's when it's six that all the shit goes wrong, and the girl fucking falls down the stairs or whatever happens. It's like, goes really bad, and I was realizing the implications of, first of all, the circle that it comes out on, what is it, 9/11, 68 or something, and then it takes years till 71 till it gets released in the U.S. So, like, it spreads across the globe through a number of years, showing it in different countries, and it begins at 9/11 and it ends at 9/11. So you have this full circle represented. But then the whole joke in the film is that it's not a full circle because Mia Farrow is removed. And I was relating that to Crowley's tableau, I don't know how you pronounce it, where you arrange, when we were doing the sink cabin, Doug, you pointed out the hero's journey of arranging the major arcana of a tarot deck into a Vesica Pisces, basically, where you have the above and then you have the under, you know, where it goes in the circle. Yeah. And there's, if you look at the correspondences in Crowley's deck, I wrote a thing out on this at one point. You can see, first of all, that all the signs of the zodiac go in order through the sequence. But then also, there's an alignment that happens back and forth from the upper to the lower, where it's like an exact reflection. And you can see this represented all the way through with the signs, with the exception of the Lover's card in relationship to the Tower. And that's what throws the whole thing off. So it's not a completely stable structure, like, and so I was relating that to the circle and full circle. It's kind of a weird thing to think about, but if you arrange the cards and you take a look, you'll start to notice correspondences all over the place, like sun and moon in relationship to the emperor and the empress, and just the fact that you have at the end the cornerstone of it is the lust card. So, and then, you know, it goes from Wheel of Fortune to lust, so Wheel of Fortune on the top, lust in the corner. And then on the bottom, you have the hangman, who's flipped. So it's like telling you to fucking flip it. You have a mirror now. It's really interesting.
Is sync magical correspondence? Is that,
yes,
the same definition?
Totally. Yeah. And if you could look at magic in different ways. I mean, if you look at magic as directing nature in accordance with the will through the power of our projection or whatever, right, then there's that. Or if you look at it as, you know, determinism on some level, you can go there if that's how you're inclined, you know. I don't.
So, all right, let me, there's a few things.
I have to go to bed.
A few things real quick. So you have the Charles Manson, before he puts the swastika on his head, puts the X, right? Which X being 10 being the Wheel of Fortune card, right? You have Sharon Tate, who has the rope around her neck, even though she there was a thing of where she was hung from the rafters, making her, in a sense, the Hanged Man, right? And then there's even the guy who gives Charles Manson his gun was a cowboy stuntman who specialized in fake hanging scenes.
Really?
Yeah. So it's like the Hangman's gun ends up with Manson. So it's like all these different things. And there was even like there was a thing where Yeah, talking about you know, Manson's philosophy, and he says, like, it was the thing that women represent are a reflection only, and men represent strength. And I'm thinking here, like, what is the feminine reflectiveness is like the part or things like that. And then here, you know, having strength, it's just like there's a, you know, there's a one of the family members' name is Zero. You know, it's like it's just like. It's like everything of the throw is sort of represented in there. Even the gun that's used is a 22 caliber, you know, being the 22 Trumps.
Was it a six shooter?
I actually think the thing was that it was such a unique gun, it was actually a 9 shooter.
Ooh. Oh no! Happiness is a fucking warm gun. Revolution number 9.
Revolution number 9. Exactly.
Revolution. Fucking Metatron. Oh, that is weird. Oh god.
And wait, and did you say somewhere back there that Manson related to the Eon card? That was somehow related.
His attorney.
So the attorney's name is Shin, which is the Hebrew letter associated with the judgment card. But Manson's whole thing was about Helter Skelter was the coming judgment. It basically was Armageddon. He was helping bring about Armageddon. The fact that here, when he's put on trial or being judged, he's being defended by Shin as he's bringing about the final judgment.
Right. It's also full circle because fucking Helter Skelter is when I get to the bottom, I go back to the top of the slide where I stop and I turn, you know, I go for a ride till I get to the bottom and I see you again. So it's literally the infinite spiraling loop. So, and that's what you
right,
see.
And again, the wheel of, right. And then, so putting the X on your head, in a sense, you're furthering that correlation of being, you're stuck on the wheel.
Yeah. He's literally nailed to the cube of space unfolded. Yeah. You know, when the first time somebody showed me,
Doug, I need to go to bed.
You want to go to bed? Go ahead, go to bed.
I don't want to go to bed, but I get up so early.
I don't know who to laugh at more. Doug,
happy birthday! Happy birthday,
David! Like, consumed this massive amount of information real quick and just goes, "Okay, I'm done with that. Moving on." Doug's like, "I need sleep."
Now that's interesting. So what are you going to do with that, Alan? That's some trippy – that is some trippy shit, man. That's what they say.
He's going to write a book about it.
Well, honestly, it has – I have to work – like I was trying – with Suicide Kings, I was trying to skip over like or just touch lightly on – like, you know, I was really trying to go like shoot from JFK and kind of like rapid fire – up to 9/11, but what as I'm
so now you're gonna do Homicide Kings?
Manson's thing proves my entire thesis of Suicide Kings. I mean, the entire
and when you got Manson in your corner, you know you're doing everything.
No, my point with Suicide Kings is that we're trying. We have this sort of innate desire to try and put our egos in check, but we haven't properly digested what that means, and so we're acting it out in all these horrible ways by killing a president or taking down the World Trade Center or killing Sharon Tate. The idea is that, like, this is sort of like there's a psychological impulse to do this, but if you don't know how to handle that, you can take this into a very grim direction. And so it's like, instead of saying, you know, the Kantian wave, like all these, you know, 9/11 represents this stargate of consciousness. And in a sense, that's true. But what I'm saying is, in looking for the stargate of consciousness, we're not hitting like a bullseye. We're like, you know, we're a little off. So it's like someone is, you're trying to hit the stargate of consciousness, but the only way we know how to manifest it is in these skewed ways, right, these skewed and dangerous ways.
We're hitting the bull's eye, but the bull has one eye. I have two eyes. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. I mean, man, the whole thing.
Not okay. That was not okay.
So it's not that Manson's in my corner. It's that Manson's proving, like, is it kind of proving what I'm saying. Everything in every spot in here, Manson or the family's philosophy of like what they say it meant, they're saying it was about killing the ego. They said that they had to have enough love in their hearts to be willing to kill these people because it was really killing a part of themselves. They said once they realized that there was no more distinction between them and the people they were killing, they were killing these people out of love to destroy this sort of greater ego. And then, I mean, which is explicitly what I've been trying to say. And then there's the idea that there's a guy, Christmas is like, oh, you know, like, how could you kill your father? And he says, like, he says, my father's no different from me, all this sort of stuff. It's like killing the ego. And then there was a thing, one of the guys they use the expression in murdering him, they brought him to the now.
Whoa.
What? Yeah, it's like to be in now consciousness means you can't have an ego. So they killed this guy to bring him into the now.
Well, that's why I keep coming back to the Kleepote idea that the shell around the reality is like a reflection which is skewed. It's like a warped version of the thing. And so if there are actual dynamics that are, yeah, totally, that are underneath the surface, that there is an actual mechanics too, then we're like replicating that and it's coming out in all these fucking weird ass ways because there is an order. It infers that there is an order. It's just, we are having a hard time embracing the actual order and just would rather distance ourselves and create little islands for ourselves, and it's not going to work out because it's not the reality.
Yeah. So, like I said, I agree wholeheartedly with you on that.
What do you got, Doug?
Go to bed. You guys are good guys. It's fun.
Doug, thank you for
two
wonderful years of 42 minutes. We appreciate it. It's a great show.
And I'll tell you what I'm proud of.
Please?
We every week. We did it every week. There are times Will's hated it. I've hated it. We keep coming back. We're doing it.
You say it, Rip Van Doug.
But you're always glad you did it after you've done it. See.
After we've done it, yeah, there
it's
was
like a yoga class.
I went through, yeah.
Well, we've gotten to the point where we know it doesn't matter if at the time that you think it's a complete and utter failure. When you go back and listen to it, you're like, yeah, that's not so bad.
Yeah.
So now it's like a little bit of confidence that there's you
we
can't
know what
trust
we're doing.
Yourself.
We just, yeah, we
you
know.
Have to. It's not about us at all. It's all about whoever we're interviewing to a point. And we have to rely on them to be into whatever.
They're into them, usually.
They're into them. Everybody's
people love
them.
Talking about themselves. And we.
And speaking of which, I'd like to say all of this that we've been talking tonight is encompassed in one actor that is on the tip of my tongue. And that actor is Andras Jones.
Ooh. All right, well, let Doug go, because I actually wanted to talk about your
film. We want to talk about you, Doug, behind your back, so.
Oh, that too.
I'm feeling like my eyes are starting to look a little old.
Rip Van Doug.
My back hurts a little more.
Little Rip Van
you
Douglas.
So, you know, I had a realization a few weeks ago, and I've been waiting for today's episode to really kind of talk about this, is that so many people in the sync community have, you know, like this Joseph Campbell monomyth, but everyone has their own sort of monomyth. You know, Jay Kotz is going to make everything into Jupiter Joy. You know, Jason Barrera is going to make everything, you know, Gnostic Sophia. I'm probably going to make everything Osiris Kingkill. You know, Mark LeClaire is going to make everything, you know, Valis Flute. We all look at the same, we can all look at the same thing, and we're seeing our stories reflected back at us, right? However, there are a few people who are doing something different, and I feel like, Will, what you're doing, even if you might have your personal sort of syncs mirrored, I love that your film is called What's Wrong with the Mirror, because whereas everyone else is using synchronicity or synchromysticism as a mirror, you are using it as a lens. And I feel like you're looking at each actor and you're saying what their story is. You're not finding your own story in their work. You're finding what their story is. Mm. And I think it's a uniquely and very important and very... it's the truly sort of egoless work of, like, not putting your shit onto them, not projecting your stuff onto their story, but finding, like, a good, you know, diagnosis or reading of what their symbol set is. And I just wanted to sort of commend you for that.
Well, you hit it on the nail. I mean, that's what we're shooting for. So I appreciate that a great deal. Because I think that I would encourage everyone to think along those lines. And there's a lot of different layers of sync, period. But, I mean, you can only... The medium that I'm so fond of gives the opportunity of connecting. Like, there's a lot that goes into a making of a film that the people who watch it are completely unaware of. And the individuals who are on the other side of that lens are eager to talk about it. So it's the only way to do it.
Yeah, I think, like, this is probably why... See, for me to express that, I had to do the sync books and put all this work into sync book radio and stuff like that, is to say, I want to see what other people see in it, you know, to get all the different readings and try and get a cross-section of ideas out there. But... you know, I'm not able to do that myself. So it's like, well I'm going to create a space where everyone can bring their ideas to it. Whereas you have the ability to kind of skip that middleman.
Well, it's inspired by, you know, Andras's dad a lot too. I think what happened or what he's presenting in The Dream Poet and how he basically, like, synthesized everybody's interpretations of dreams to a point it was like no longer, you know, it's no longer telling the individual what the dream means or having a dream dictionary or anything like that. It's like throwing all of that shit out the window and doing it live, like doing it, you know, this person said this dream, but we don't even care what this person's experience is. I want to know what the audience out there thinks. And that's like the true understanding that, I mean, no, however many times you can tell yourself, we're all one, we're all one, we're all one, yada, 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 you are misinterpreting someone. You're projecting your shit onto them, and you are understanding that there is something in them that you don't like about yourself, 9 times out of 10.
You know, that was what was missing in Room 237 that I wanted. And maybe it's self-explanatory and enough people recognize this anyway, but just pointing out that it's really about you. Because you got these different people with their... And everyone's of them seems... Except maybe John Phil Ryan, he's gone on a different tip. But, like, they're identified with their position on what The Shining's about. I'll tell you what the fucking Shining's about. Shining's about the Holocaust.
Right.
Look at the fucking typewriter. Right. You know, and it's like... Right. It's like, okay, oh, it's about the faking of the moon landing. It's like, no, The Shining's about you. Shining's like, it's so archetypal that you're going to see yourself reflected back to you, and you're going to see the darker, deeper aspects of yourself because that's what it's geared towards. That's why I
what's
feel like
wrong with the motherfucking ear. What's wrong with the goddamn ear?
That's why the Red Book's sitting on Ullman's desk.
That comes from Andras. That was a song that Andras actually wrote. That was what's wrong with the mirror. I mean,
Go on. I just wanted to give, because you mentioned John. I think John Phil Ryan does that in Totally. I mean, he actually, that's the end of the movie. Where
yeah,
he's saying,
I take it back. I haven't seen it in a while, but after I started talking about that, I kind of realized that is kind of what he did, because he psychedelicized it.
Yeah, and not only that, the thing that I love about John Phil Ryan, his thing isn't, I'm going to be a detective and find out what Kubrick meant. He comes up with this totally gonzo thing, which is show the movie backwards and forwards, and right. ends up doing, you know, it's very much in your wheelhouse, or like the stuff that inspired me about your work, David, is like he takes The Shining and makes a sync film out of it. And I without him in that film, it doesn't really jump. It doesn't really cross the Rubicon of sync. Mm-hmm. It almost like it would be up against it, and then it's John Phil Ryan, that gonzo aspect. That's like you said, psychedelic aspect.
Yeah, it's interactive, and that's what we're doing here. We're interacting. We're not just.
Well, it was the acceptance that there was no like you said, everyone else came to their conclusions based on their own point of view. But what Phil Ryan did was basically say, "Hey, wait a second." He went out and searched down. There's like so many different points of view. And then based off of something someone said in one of their blogs about it, that he didn't even interpret it the correct way, and he admitted it to that. And I think in 237, he basically said, I don't even think that that's what they meant, but then he switched it. That's like the acceptance that your point of view doesn't make sense. Like the actual truth of the matter doesn't even make sense. It's like you can play these two movies, you know, or I say there are two movies, just one movie just reversed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the acceptance that it doesn't make any sense. It's like this leap of faith in a way. And it doesn't. Like, to accept sync, like, to accept what I see in the movies of actors like Andras Jones, which is mirror, 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 mirror. It's just like you don't even have to use all the mirrors. You can use three mirrors and say, okay, that's a big what the fuck. Like, why is that being done there? And then you like break it down to even further of like, well, why would it be there? And you'll find that it will make sense all the way around the board. Everybody's sync makes sense all the way around the board. It's just like playing this little game like Radio 8 Ball where you kind of spin it and see how they fit together.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Will, did you get the picture I sent you?
Of?
Oh, I sent this goes right with what you're saying because I was – So I'm back. The reason I'm in LA right now is I'm getting back into the acting game, and in a lot of ways, that was initiated by Will's films. I don't think it didn't like. It's not like Will's films made people interested in me as an actor. Will's films made me interested in me as an actor, and eventually, they may make people interested in me as an actor. Mostly, it got me excited about the possibilities here. So I'm back here, and I'm doing these like. Meeting these casting directors, and I was at a place just before this episode started where I was about to go and do a scene from – funny, I'm bringing sync into my work, so I picked up the scene. I'm doing a scene from Rescue Me.
Magnolia where, and Avon?
Yeah.
Avon.
And
Avon.
It's
8-Ball.
And so I'm doing this scene from Rescue Me where
Ears.
He talks about 911. And
pictures,
brain, I go outside,
and the brain? Sorry, mirrors, frame,
whoa,
picture.
Whoa, let him finish.
Will, you're so he's talking about the picture, but nobody can see it. So let me just describe the picture. So as I go
I'm
outside,
having flashbacks to the Andy Dick thing I listened to.
So I'm going outside and I'm trying to like when you're hanging out in a room full of actors, just the if you're sensitive at all to energy, like it's just bad energy. A lot of stressed out people who are you know, insecure about all the wrong things. So I had to go out and step outside, and I step outside, and there's this glorious moon, and right next door to where I am is a store called 8-Ball. And on the wall, like a sign, like there's these signs right on the wall of the thing that says 8-Ball under the moon. Now, Will, you can read what you were reading, the names of
those
signs.
There's a weird sign that's out front, like a post that has it almost looks like street sign, but it's not a street sign. It's like what the actual store has inside of it. And it says picture, frames, mirrors, Aztec.
By the way, the moon tonight was gorgeous. I was actually trying to take some photos of it earlier. Amazing, the gorgeous moon tonight. I'm on the other side of the country, but it paused me in my tracks for real.
Well, this is extraordinarily interesting to Andros because of what the project we were just working on. Because we actually say that Andros breaks out of the frames. This is basically built upon the idea that the picture steals a little bit of the soul. It has a lot to do with mirrors, of course. The Aztec is like a fucking wild card, but it's so baffling. That's like a prime example. That's like should probably well, you, be the cover.
Andros, you do realize the Aztec sink here is that you said you were doing a Rescue Me thing. We're about to do another sink event, this time in California. But the first sync event we did in New York, the poster for that, I used the Twin Towers, and I actually didn't use a Mayan calendar in the center. I used the Aztec sun sign in the center. So that was the Aztec between the two towers. I mean, did you get what I'm saying? Like, here we are less than a week away from, or I guess about a week away from another event. You called back up 9/11
and this Aztec thing, which I was going to go down another sync thread, but I think we should stay here. And the other interesting sync is for at some point in the future, not the too distant future, people will be able to listen to this and watch the final installment of Will's 3-part sync series on my SyncWeb, and the third installment. Can I tell the name of it? Well,
oh, by all means, please.
It's called Showman Shaman, and the first installment was narrated by Alan, who we have here, the editor of the sort of the sync godfather.
It was room 237 before there was a room 237, motherfucker.
I was hanging out there. I was the guy in there before Jack Nicholson. And then the second installment was read by Ray Don Chong, narrated by Ray Don Chong, and the third installment is being narrated by Morgan Shepherd, William Morgan Shepherd, who was my teacher and sort of is my, my sync Obi-Wan, my acting Obi-Wan Kenobi, who I write about in my book, and obviously share the name with our Will Morgan.
William Morgan Shepherd. William Morgan,
just
which
today,
has a, like,
before,
whole bunch of meaning in and of itself.
Yeah, that's like Billy Shears, because Shepherd Shears. Billy, William.
So, he just today did the voice. I went over to his house, to his apartment, and did the voice. He's like 81 years old. He's still got a really rich voice, but it'll be amazing. But I guess the point is that today we sort of locked in the last piece of this series that Will, I guess Will and I have been working on since before we met in a certain way. I mean, I've been working on it, and he's been working on it. Eventually we met, and his vision connected with whatever it is that I've been doing, and, you know, away we go. And then to just add a little bit more sync to that, this morning, in another errand, I ended up having to spent an hour in the morning with the woman who produced the film Hurricane Festival that I was in with William Morgan Shepherd, which is highlighted immensely in Will Morgan's film. So, and all that is leading up to this walking out of this acting studio and seeing this eight ball and these mirrors and frames and once again Will's film creeping out of the film and into my life.
Now, if you guys would be willing to talk for a few minutes, one of the things that I keep stressing why I feel like Obviously, Andros, you have a personal connection to these things, but why I feel like this, the relationship you guys have is, and with the films you're doing are really important for people interested in synchromysticism, is because, you know, you could make, you know, Jake can make a video about Robin Tunney, and it can be interesting, but we don't know at what point what's intentional, what's not. You know, we have to speculate. We can talk about Stanley Kubrick, and we can speculate. What was Stanley Kubrick trying to do? You know, what did he mean by this? I think with Will being able to make a video about Andras's career and having Andras there to say, this is what we talked about, this is what we didn't talk about, no, that was the farthest thing from my mind at the time, or yes, that's what was going on in my life, but that wasn't discussed, you know, whatever it is. It's sort of like a really strong validation for the work, I feel like.
Yeah, I think so too. It's, I mean...
There's only one way to find out, though. We have to ask Andy Dick if he likes penis. That's the only way.
Well, we know that.
I think in a way, it's, being at the center of this, it sounds like, you know, whatever, I have to get over myself to get into myself to say that I do think that this series is the next iteration, and it's for the exact same reason that Alan's saying, of where Sync Film's headed. It's what, honestly, what I really hoped I could do with Radio 8 Ball, with having filmmakers making films for the celebrities and having the celebrities and the filmmakers be able to interact. And it's just that that vision ended up playing out in a different way when I met Will, and the mirror camera light got shown back on me, and now I'm the sync guinea pig for that. But if it's as effective as I think it is, I think it just sets up doing, you know, more actors wanting to have this done to them, which I think is going to be when it gets really interesting.
Totally.
When actors start commissioning this kind of work, or just like putting it out there, or just even being, or getting that it's great to connect with it. And that's sort of my Johnny Apple seeding, is like saying to my fellow actor friends and saying on every podcast I do, this is an amazing thing. And, you know, every actor should have one. If you've been in a few films.
It's designed to release like psychic energy. It's designed to like blow your mind. But fine tuning that and finding what is relevant, especially to the situation. Like, you're involved with this actor. What is relevant to them? Like, whittles away like anything that you could possibly waste your time with.
And, you know, even like there's a guy at my job who I showed him like a few sync videos. I think it was when you put up What's Wrong with the Mirror. I was at work and I wanted to watch it. And I was like, here, like, why don't you watch the first part of this, watch the second part. And I think for him, like, as his first introduction to sync, it was a little hard for him to understand because these aren't movies that most anyone has seen. So it's like, you know, trying to explain what is it you're really watching. But then I was able to show him some of the like Jim Sanders stuff with some more mainstream films that he had seen. And so then he started to like, kind of get like a clear picture of what it was we did. And he was able like so quickly to be like, hey, he's like, you know, my favorite actor is Russell Crowe. And he's like, there's this thing like we're in Gladiator. He wears like rabbits like hung around his armor or something. And then he ends up buying like a sports team called the Rabbits.
Uh-huh.
And then like all this. And he was like, well, I'd start looking and see if there's more like rabbits in his thing. You know, like, whatever. Right. It's just like he was able to, like, it just clicked. Okay, take something you're interested in and see what is the archetypal underpinning to it or something, or what's, you know, what's strange attracted to it. However you want to phrase that, but I think it's something that people can get. If once we show people what it kind of is, I think people get it really quickly.
Totally. And then they'll drop things back to you that you never would have thought of. Or you may have thought of, but it would have taken you another few years. But, like, you put some connections out there, and all of a sudden people fill in all these other blanks that just, it's extraordinary. It's my favorite part about this, really, is the not just, like, feedback on what I'm doing of like, oh, good job, but like, hey, this made me think of, and they'll like have all this shit. Like, I love that. I love that. It's one of my favorite things ever.
Yeah.
Well, like, without your stuff, there would definitely be no Lifehouse Matrix. Would never. I mean, I wouldn't. I don't know why it seems so obvious, but it's only obvious because you were the guy who was like, oh, it doesn't have to just. For me, it was the first guy I knew who was, you know, very much saying, oh, Wizard of Oz is like Wizard of Oz, Dark Side of the Moon is like Johnny B. Goode. It's like the first toe in rock and roll, and now there's all these other avenues to explore. Saying, okay, well, now if you've electrified the blues, if you've broken that barrier of artist intention, then, you know, wow, what else can you play with? And it throws down the gauntlet for anyone whose mind is like that to be like, oh, wow.
You know,
you can do it.
I think I realize what today's episode is called. Wood.
What is it?
Full Circle Jerk.
Full Circle Jerk Jacket.
I don't know. Oh god, it's so fucking true. That's so
funny. No, because it's a rock band, it should be the Full Circle Jerks.
Fuck.
So there was a point, like, okay, so I used to not want to play an album that if I looked at the year difference of when it was made, the timing difference between an album and a film, if the film came out after the album, I wouldn't even try it. And like, for the longest time, I thought that the Dark Crystal actually came out before Saucer Full of Secrets, which now I'm like, duh, no way. I didn't.
So you're saying you wouldn't even try it unless it would make sense.
Yeah. I mean, well, it was quite a long time ago. But one of the best sync albums I've come across is actually Melancholia with the Smashing Pumpkins, Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, if you start the album on the 24th second of the film. And so, like, but that's, like, long after the fucking album came out, and that's, like, an example of, like, I really can't explain this. Like, this is just off the charts. And so, you know, and the Dark Crystal.
What if they made the movie to fit the record?
Well, they could. It's just I was like more doubtful of that, and I'm just realizing how ridiculous my own limitations that I'm putting on my exploration are. And I want to keep it real. I want to be, you know, like it, like leave open the possibility for there being intent, but like I'm like a director going to that kind of trouble editing the thing, da 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 da, and it's like, why not?
Well, yeah. You know what the thing is, that now that you, but I think this is what all this work does. It opens up all of these new possibilities creatively with cinema. And okay, so that maybe that hasn't been done, but why not do it? Why not cut? You know, you shoot your film, you know it's going to be a certain amount of time, and then like there is a level of constantly when you're making film. Creating and letting go, creating and letting go. You know, you get everything set and then you put the actors on and then something, you know, and then you let go. Or, you know, you make a new choice and to light it in a way that wasn't storyboarded or whatever, because that's how it's happening there. So you control and release, control and release. And the idea, you know, we're putting that out there. There's no reason why someone wouldn't get, okay, a 90-minute film should sync really well with a 90-minute record. And why not make it a great, my favorite record? You know, I want my film to sync with my favorite record.
Right. Though I've moved away from, like, I mean, I never really got into the Smashing Pumpkins. Like, I did this just based on the sync. I just saw Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness and Melancholia and saw that they were both inspired by Dürer's Melancholia 1. And so I'm like, oh, well, that they align in that way. I mean, I connected the Dark Crystal
they have
and Saucer Full of Secrets.
There's like a wavelength or frequency that they're connected to. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I did the Saucer Full of Secrets with the Dark Crystal because of
magical
the, because
correspondence
of, because
it
of a piece
same
by
source.
I think someone should cut
their
movie to the Clash Sandinista.
What did you say, Andras?
I was just thinking, because Clash Sandinista is a three-record set. You could probably make a nice movie out of something. Like, someone should cut their movie. And it's, you know, it's cinematic. It's punk rock. It'll have, you know, the Clash Sandinista, you could cut a really good movie to that, I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, some of the best ones I found were Lady Gaga's. And I was like, I can stomach Lady Gaga compared to other popular pop music. I could deal with it. And now I actually like it for synchronicity purposes. And I mean, fuck it. Like, you know, you listen to something enough times, it's, you know, it's like I can, you know, it's interesting the way that that'll happen. Because, like, that was purely synchronicity. I'm like, oh, she's a Scarlet Woman. Oh, and I start to see her symbolism. She just, I mean, it's out of control. And so, you know, it's interesting. Yeah, Metropolis, the Fame Monster. It's flawless. It's incredible.
No, but I guess what I was saying was actually.
No, I mean when you said your favorite
album. I
could
see someone making a
film. You're
like,
I like
doing all
this
the work
album.
Shooting it, getting it mostly there. Oh, I got it. I see what you're saying.
Well, you should play. If you're going to do it yourself, it should be something that you're into. I'm not going to go and shoot a fucking movie to sync with an album that I don't like.
Well, and I think the other piece would be if you used that as a key. Like, if you were able to, like, if you did that, you said, okay, I've made a movie, it's there. Now, what happens if I play it to, and then you decide, whatever this is, whatever your template is, whether it's, you know, maybe it's Revolver and Rubber Soul, or Rubber Soul and Revolver, or maybe it's one, you know, whatever it is, and then be able to say, well, those albums exist out there in the world. You really like my movie? Now try it. Now try it on acid. Except don't try it on acid. Try it on the Beatles, or try it on Pink Floyd, mm-hmm. or try it on the Doors, or, you know.
Well, whatever.
It's, well, what I'm, and I guess my point isn't necessarily how someone should do that.
Right.
My point is, so going back to the feedback you're talking about, that the kind of work that got started by, you know, just stoners in the 60s with, and the 70s, I guess, mostly the 70s, with Wizard of Oz and Dark Side of the Moon, that you are then sort of amplified and sort of blew out, that has all kinds of ramifications from the standpoint of, as a creative artist, not just people making these, like the creativity of making these films and finding them, but the things it suggests about what's possible about syncing music and film in a film that is way less controlled than the way it's currently done.
Totally.
And as these levels of gameplay that Kubrickian kind of mindfuckers can play with. I don't know. It's just, it's one of the things, it's not even the part of sync that gets me most excited, and you can hear how excited it gets me.
Totally.
So I know you guys were asking about winding this down. I think that's a good idea. But,
yeah, it must be late for you right now.
Okay. Happy anniversary.
Yeah, well, hold on. I don't know if my audio is cutting out because I feel like you guys aren't
hearing. We can hear you.
Okay.
You're fine.
I want to leave, before we leave, I want to at least get this out here. If you for our regular listeners of Always Record, I know we just came back from a break and then we were off last week, but it looks like we're probably going to be another 2 weeks off because next Thursday I'm flying out to California. I'm actually going to spend next Thursday probably with David watching Melancholia with Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness.
I'm so bummed I'm missing it!
I want you to
know what?
To prepare.
Actually, I'll be in.
To prepare, I've listened to that album on repeat, like, every day at work.
Nice.
Like, nonstop. But just so, like, I have the a real familiarity and framework for it. And I still haven't seen Melancholia, but I will watch it in the next week. But I just want to say, it's like, so then obviously, if anyone lives on the West Coast or willing to make a trip out or whatever... Ross will be
Dude. Your audio did cut out that time.
All
if
right.
You're in California.
If you're in California or willing to make the trip, Saturday, October 26th, David, myself, and Andras will be doing an event in Berkeley, Saturday, October 26th. The information is on the website, thesyncbook.com/events.
Don't forget that we'll be, like I just mentioned, we will be also featuring Victoria Nelson. Gothica author, and will be presenting a Radio 8 Ball show with music from Ira Marlowe, who was our guest on our most recent Synchronize, featuring that sets up this trip. And
if you haven't already, listen to Synchronize episode 4, David's going to be presenting some of his beautiful collages. Will be on display at the theater. So we'll have a little gallery space, a little Radio 8 Ball, a little conversation with myself and Victoria Nelson, and I'm sure we'll hang out. If anyone's able to join in on that experience, we would love to have you. And if you can't, and you're just listening to this as an Always Record listener, know that since we'll probably be off next week and probably the Halloween slot, I think we're not going to do this. We'll probably have Always Record will come back the first week of November.
Yep.
Just in time for 11/11.
42 minutes. We'll be back next week with boobies. Nice. It will be titillating, I promise.
It's an author who wrote a book called Breasts.
Sweet.
And then Doug told me the original image that I made for the episode was perhaps too controversial. He asked me to remake it.
Save it for a Synchronize.
All right. Good night, gentlemen. Good night. Have a wonderful evening.
Guys, be well.
Bye.